people that have remained after the conquest of Israel under the leadership of Joshua. But in the end, if you were to summarize Saul's reign, for the most part, as a spiritual leader, he is very ineffective. And shortly into his reign, his disobedience, his failure to submit to God in every aspect of his life, leads Samuel the prophet to announce to him that the kingdom is going to be ripped away from you. In other words, what normally happens for a king is that their son becomes king, and Samuel says, because of your rebellion, your disobedience, that's not going to happen. But God already has someone in store to rise to the throne, a man after God's own heart, and that's going to be, of course, David. And so once Saul realizes this, a good portion of his life, he's just obsessed with jealousy in pursuing David and essentially trying to get rid of David because he is the threat to this dynasty that Saul wants to create. So it's really, it's a pretty sad story of King Saul. The second season, we talked about King David. David is cut from another cloth. David is the man after God's own heart, and he does great things for the nation of Israel. We are reminded as we read through the story of David that he is not perfect. We all know about his affair with Bathsheba, the killing of Bathsheba's husband, Uriah. We're aware of the difficulties that he had with his family. He was involved in a lot of bloodshed. Yet in spite of that, David has something about him where he is pursuing God. He is a man after God's own heart. He's full of praise. And he rises to that level of being the king who is not just a military leader, but he is a spiritual leader of Israel as well. We see that in the Psalms. We can see the heart of David as he just opens up in praise to God. I mean, what an example of someone who recognized the glory of God, who spoke about it, who sung about it, and his enthusiasm about God and pursuing God just filtered down into the nation as well. So he draws the people into a deeper relationship with God. An important thing that David does during his reign is that he captures Jerusalem, and he makes Jerusalem the capital city, and he brings the Ark of the Covenant into Jerusalem. When David is confronted with sin, and certainly he does sin just like all of us, unlike Saul, we see that David has a contrite and a repentant heart. He recognizes his sin, he repents of his sins, he mourns of his sins, and he finds that peace and forgiveness from God. This is something that Saul never experienced. I mean, Saul sinned, and some would argue that Saul's sins weren't as bad as David's sins, but Saul never had that repentant heart. And we see that in the Psalms as well, Psalm 51, where David is just broken. He's crushed by his sin of killing Uriah and his affair with Bathsheba. Another important aspect of David's reign is a promise that God makes to David, and this is in 2 Samuel chapter 7, verses 11 through 16. This is the covenant. This is the agreement that David is making with King David. Let me read that to you, 2 Samuel 7, beginning in the second part of verse 11. God speaking to David. The Lord declares to you that the Lord himself will establish a house for you. When your days are over and you rest with your ancestors, I will raise up your offspring to succeed you, your own flesh and blood, and I will establish his kingdom. He is the one who will build a house for my name, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever. I will be his father, and he will be my son. When he does wrong, I will punish him with a rod wielded by men, with floggings inflicted by human hands. But my love will never be taken away from him as I took it away from Saul, whom I removed from before you. Your house and your kingdom will endure forever before me. Your throne will be established forever. So God is saying that David, not only will you reign as king, not only will you sit on the throne, but a descendant of yours will sit on a throne forever and ever. And we're going to see that play out as we continue to read through the Old Testament. A son of David is going to be a successor to the throne as we read through the rest of the Old Testament until Jerusalem is destroyed in 586 BC. But even more, this prophecy is looking forward to the Son of David, Jesus Christ, who will reign on the throne forever and ever. Ultimately, this promise is fulfilled in Jesus. Oftentimes, Jesus is referred to in the New Testament as the Son of David. And so when Jewish people heard that, that was a reminder of God's promise to David that a son of his would reign on the throne forever and ever. In fact, when Jesus is introduced in the New Testament in Matthew chapter 1, verse 1, the genealogy, this is what it says. This is the genealogy of Jesus, the Messiah, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Right? Now, you remember God made some promises to Abraham as well. We're not going to talk about those, but we are being reminded right now that God made this promise to David that his son, his heir, would sit on the throne forever and ever. And so these stories that we're reading, they're not just about the nation of Israel. They are about God's ultimate plan to bring to us, through King David, the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And so David, the second king of Israel, is a foreshadowing in some ways of Jesus. And so we read through the story of David. He reigns well, has his failings, of course, but as we see at the end of his life, he is that man after God's own heart. But David, at the end of his life, still has an unfulfilled dream. David wants to build a temple to God in that capital city of Jerusalem. But he's not allowed by God to do that. So let's go to 1 Chronicles 22, verses 5 through 10. All right, David, he said, "My son Solomon is young and inexperienced, and the house to be built for the Lord should be of great magnificence and fame and splendor in the sight of all the nations." That's how much David loved God. God needs this temple so that the world will see what we think of our God. "Therefore, I will make preparations for it." So David made extensive preparations before his death. This says something about David. David is never going to see with his human eyes the temple that is going to be built, but David puts all of this energy and all of this passion into preparing for this temple that will be built by his son Solomon. And that says a lot about us as well, right? Or teaches us a lot about how we need to be passionate, not just for what we do, but to prepare for the next generation to be people who are drawn closer and closer to God. Verse 6, "Then he called for his son Solomon and charged him to build a house for the Lord, the God of Israel. David said to Solomon, 'My son, I had it in my heart to build a house for the name of the Lord my God. But this word of the Lord came to me: You have shed much blood and have fought many wars. You are not to build a house for my name, because you have shed much blood on the earth in my sight. But you will have a son who will be a man of peace and rest, and I will give him rest from all of his enemies on every side. His name will be Solomon, and I will grant Israel peace and quiet during his reign. He is the one who will build a house for my name. He will be my son, and I will be his father, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom over Israel forever.'" And so that's at the end of season 2. And we come to the question, as David comes to the end of his life, we're left to continue the story with a burning question: who will be the next king? Now, it sounds like a no-brainer, doesn't it? And it seems like David is affirming right here in 1 Chronicles 22 that Solomon is to be the next king. But as David lies in his deathbed, there is another son who is going to make the claim to the throne. You see, David, one of his failures was also the fact that he took many wives and he had many sons and he didn't manage that family all that well. So there are many, many sons. So one of them, Adonijah, is going to make the claim for the throne. He does that. Adonijah is the what we believe to be the oldest living son of David. We've read about some of his other sons. Absalom, dead. Amnon, dead. There was another son in there. Nothing else is recorded. We just assume that he's dead. So Adonijah is the oldest son. So David is on his deathbed, and Adonijah takes it upon himself to declare himself as king. And he has this big party, has this big celebration. He calls in some important people, and he says, hey, I'm going to be king. Let's go out and tell the people. I'm the oldest son of King David, and so it's just natural, isn't it, that I should be the king. Remember Nathan. Nathan was the prophet who advised King David. Nathan was the prophet who approached King David after he had sinned with Bathsheba and then had killed Uriah. So Nathan was David's spiritual advisor. David is still alive at this point, but Nathan hears of this plan that Adonijah has and how he is carrying it out, and the people are actually acknowledging that Adonijah is king. But Nathan, he's kind of scratching his head, and he's thinking, and I'm adding a little bit to the story here, but Nathan is thinking, I don't know if this is how it's supposed to go. And so Nathan goes to Bathsheba. Why Bathsheba? Well, Solomon is the son of Bathsheba. And so he reminds Bathsheba that David had made a promise to Solomon that he would be next king. And so David, very weak, very feeble at this point, still has that power, still has that command over the kingdom. He puts an end to Adonijah's celebration, and he declares that Solomon is the next king. And so shortly after that, Solomon rides into the town to a very important spring just outside of Jerusalem, Gihon. And he rides on David's mule. This was a sign. This was an indication that he is the next king, riding on the king's mule. He rides into Jerusalem, maybe a foreshadowing of Jesus riding into Jerusalem on a donkey. But he rides into Jerusalem. Here's Solomon. And Zadok the priest anoints Solomon as king, recorded in 1 Kings 1, 39 through 40. Zadok the priest took the horn of oil from the sacred tent and anointed Solomon. Then they sounded the trumpet, and all the people shouted, "Long live King Solomon!" And all the people went up after him, playing pipes and rejoicing greatly, so that the ground shook with the sound. So all the trumpets are sounding, and all the people claim that Solomon is the king. So we're going to look at his life in the weeks to come. But before we look at Solomon's life, I want us just to look at this son of David, Adonijah, and learn some lessons about him. You know, a lot of lessons from the Old Testament are lessons of what not to do and what happens when you don't submit yourself to the will of God. And Adonijah is one of those examples. So let's look at Adonijah and what can we learn from him. First of all, Adonijah, he refused to submit to the Lord's plan. It was his self-promotion over submission. Rather than submit to what was already planned by David, this promise that was made, he takes it into his own hands for his own good. And I'm assuming that he knew all along what his father's plan was to anoint Solomon as king. Now, I'm assuming that David didn't always have good communication with his sons, with his children, with his wives, and so that may have broken down, but I'm assuming that Adonijah knew that Solomon was going to be the next king. But rather than accept his fate, he sought his own power and his own pleasure. And so note what happens in 1 Kings chapter 1 and in verse 5. Now Adonijah, whose mother was Haggith, put himself forward and said, "I will be king." And so he got the chariots and the horses ready with 50 men to run ahead of him. And he takes it upon himself to declare himself as king. Or the English Standard Version translates it this way. Now Adonijah, the son of Haggith, exalted himself, saying, "I will be king." He put himself forward. He was looking for his glory. He wasn't necessarily looking out for the good of the nation. He was looking for his own good. And don't we do that far too often? We want what's good for us. We want to exalt ourselves. We want the power. We want the limelight. We want the glory. And this is so opposite of what it means to be a disciple of Jesus Christ. Adonijah could have used a good dose of what Paul writes in Philippians chapter 2, where Paul says, "Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interest, but each of you to the interest of the others. Now, there are times in our lives where we're not going to get what we want. There may be times in our lives where we think that we are more qualified than other people. Or there will be times in our lives that we are motivated by power and fame and recognition. And there will be times where you will be told this is not your place, it's for someone else. Now, ambition is not wrong, but when ambition trumps submission to the will of God, then ambition becomes a sin. Adonijah needed to learn, hey, I'm not going to be the king, but I'm sure Adonijah could have been a very valuable asset in this kingdom if he had accepted his place in the kingdom. So in the kingdoms that you're involved in, when you don't get what you want, when you don't get the powerful position that you want, one godly response is, all right, God, how can I serve in the position that you have put me in? Rather than to try to exalt yourself, accept that position and know that God can use you where he puts you. Adonijah was not looking that way. Adonijah wanted his own good. He wanted his own power. Also, he had poor counsel. Adonijah consulted only with those he knew would agree with him. When you read through the story, Adonijah, he has a priest, he has a prophet, he has some people, some important governmental officials. But it's very telling that Adonijah does not include people like Zadok the priest, Nathan the prophet. How could you leave Nathan the prophet out of the plans on who's going to become king? But he essentially just gathers people that either he knows that are going to agree with him, or gathers people that he knows he's able to manipulate into agreeing with him, and then he pursues his course of action. We commit this error when we do not seek good counsel. And so many times, don't we? We've made a decision. This is what God wants me to do. And so we just gather people around us who either we know that or agree, or people who will just agree. There are people in this world who will just agree with you, all right? There are people in this world that you can manipulate into agreeing with you. And sometimes we just gather those people around. Isn't this what we should do? Isn't this, oh yeah, we're all in favor. Go for it. Rather than expanding our counsel to maybe people who may not agree with us, and especially not seeking the counsel of people that we know are spiritually mature and we're willing to submit ourselves or at least get their input, even if we know that they don't agree with us. So how often do we listen to those dissenting voices? How often do we give serious attention to people we disagree with? I think they call it like echo chamber. Is that what the term is? Echo chamber. You only listen to people who are going to echo back to you what you already believe. And so that's just not being wise. It's wise to seek the full counsel of God. You know, Solomon, of course, we'll learn about this. He's given this great gift of wisdom. He writes these proverbs. And one of the proverbs that Adonijah should have read, although it wasn't written yet, was Proverbs 15:22. Plans fail for lack of counsel, but with many advisors they succeed. So what's going on in your life? What are some goals, ambitions that you have, whether it be in your family, work, neighborhood, whatever it may be? Where do you feel God leading you? It's important for you to surround yourself with many advisors, many counselors, especially people who have proven themselves to be spiritually mature. And again, this is one of the beauties of how the church has been organized with elders, where we can go to them and we can seek their counsel. And they can give us advice. And they can help point us in the way that God has designed for us. And so don't just surround yourself with people who are going to agree with you. Don't fall victim to poor counsel. And then third thing, it seems as if Adonijah, he kind of accepts this fate. He kind of steps back, all right, Solomon is king. But it seems like it's a half-hearted submission. He had a contingency plan for a rebellion. Now, let me just give you a little bit of background. Back in 1 Kings chapter 1 and verse 1 through 4, David's last days are not all that impressive. He's old, he's bedridden, and he's cold. He can't get warm. No matter what, they can't get warm. And so they they enlist a beautiful woman. They search all the kingdom for this beautiful woman who is going to lie in bed with David to keep him warm. Now, there doesn't seem to be any sexual relations taking place there, but here is David with this woman. Her name is Abishag. And so she's not technically a concubine of David, but from the outside looking in, it would seem like David and this Abishag is a concubine of David. All right, back in those days, if you wanted to prove that you are more powerful than someone else, you would sleep with that guy's wife or one of his concubines. And if you did that, that would demonstrate to all the people that, this guy must be more impressive because look what he's did. He's taken this guy's wife or taken this guy's concubine. That would be a claim to the throne. And that's what Adonijah is going to request. After he comes to terms with Solomon being king, look what he does. He goes to Bathsheba in 1 Kings 2, 13 to 18 with this request. Now Adonijah, the son of Haggith, went to Bathsheba, Solomon's mom. Bathsheba asked him, "Do you come peacefully?" All right, legitimate question. All right, here's a guy who wants to be king. And so this says, if Adonijah becomes king, then this puts Solomon and Bathsheba in a very difficult situation. In fact, very dangerous, potentially dangerous situation. "Do you come peacefully?" He answered, "Yes, peacefully." Then he added, "I have something to say to you." "You may say it," she replied. "As you know," he said, "the kingdom was mine. All Israel looked to me as their king. But things changed, and the kingdom has gone to my brother, for it has come to him from the Lord." All right, I'm okay. Things changed. I understand that. "Now I have one request to make of you. Do not refuse me." "You may make it," she said. So he continued, "Please ask King Solomon, he will not refuse you, to give me Abishag the Shunammite as my wife." "Very well," Bathsheba replied. "I will speak to the king for you." All right, Bathsheba relays this information to Solomon, and he sees it for what it is. All right, Adonijah is making a play to lead a rebellion against King Solomon. And so Adonijah seems to accept the Lord, but then also has this contingency plan. All right? And aren't we like this sometimes as well? All right, "God, I'm going to obey you now, but I'm going to look for a loophole down the road. I'm going to make sure I have some contingency plan where I can actually get what I want." And so our mind starts spinning and we start making these plans of ultimately living in rebellion to God. "I'm going to sit back right now. I'm going to make sure that if something happens, I can get what I want." And again, this is not what discipleship is. Discipleship is giving it all up to the Lord. Adonijah was not willing to do that. We like to have contingency plans to rebel. I did this once, not proud to say this. I was probably 10 years old or whatever. Played baseball in the backyard. Well, my friend's backyard, we were playing baseball. Kenny Atkinson was his name. I still remember his name. We were friends growing up. And so I thought he had stolen my baseball. I was convinced of it. My baseball was missing. And so I had convinced myself that he somehow had gone off. And I was mad. I wanted my baseball. You don't mess with my baseball, right? And so if that ball didn't show up, and if Kenny didn't confess and admit that he stole my baseball, I made this little contingency plan. I took one of his baseballs, and I hid it under the fence where no one would see it. He had this wooden privacy fence around his house. And there was this little, how fences are, a little space in between. And so my plan was, when we're all done playing, I could sneak up there, no one would see me, and I would take Kenny's baseball. I'd be okay, Kenny, we're fine, but then I would have that contingency plan. Never found out if Kenny actually stole that baseball. I don't know what I do with that baseball, and I don't know what happened to Kenny. Kenny, if you're listening online, I'm sorry. I owe you a baseball, wherever you are. I doubt Kenny's listening to me. But isn't that sometimes what we do? I'm going to obey right now, and I'm going to be happy, but man, if there comes an opportunity for me to find some type of loophole, I'm going to jump on that as soon as I can. So let's not go along with God's plan. And this may happen when we, because Adonijah, he feels this disappointment, and this is what we feel. When we don't get what we want, that position of power, then we think, all right, I've got some dirt on this person, and I can... We just start... Satan works within our minds to give us an opportunity to rebel in the future. I may not get my way now, but I will later on. What we need to do is obey and move on. All right, guess what? When Solomon hears this request, what happens to Adonijah? He's put to death. This half-hearted obedience rarely works out well. So Adonijah now is gone. Solomon is king. There are other people that die in his wake as well. But a summary statement is offered in 1 Kings chapter 2, 10 through 12. Then David rested with his ancestors and was buried in the city of David. He had reigned 40 years over Israel, 7 years in Hebron, and 33 years in Jerusalem. So Solomon sat on the throne of his father David, and his rule was firmly established. And as we'll see in the weeks to come, Solomon is going to bring this nation to new heights of power. He's going to expand the borders. He's going to bring this nation to new heights of prestige. He is going to build this fabulous temple. He's going to be recognized by world leaders. But in the end, there's going to be civil war. At the end of the story, this one nation is going to be divided into two. All that to come as we get into season three. Let me just close with this. These are the words of David to his son Solomon, 1 Kings 2, 2 through 4, a charge to the new king, which I think is also meaningful and appropriate to each one of us as we have our little kingdoms, as we have our areas of influence. Listen to King David as he speaks to his son, recorded in Scripture, speaking to us. I'm about to go the way of all the earth, he said. So be strong. Act like a man and observe what the Lord your God requires. Walk in obedience to him and keep his decrees and commands, his laws and regulations as written in the law of Moses. Do this so you may prosper in all you do and wherever you go, and that the Lord may keep his promise to me. If your descendants watch how they live and if they walk faithfully before me with all their heart and soul, you will never fail to have a successor on the throne of Israel. So as we enter this season, let's be reminded that it's not wealth, it's not temples, it's not prestige that's going to lead us to success. The king of Israel will only be successful as he is willing and passionate to submit to the Lord. And that goes for all of us. Yeah. Only will we find meaning and purpose in this life. And Saul is going to conclude this later in his life, isn't he? Only when we acknowledge Jesus Christ as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. That's what this story is all about. Are you willing to submit to Jesus Christ? If you're not a believer, if you're not a Christian, if you're not part of the kingdom of God, then there is no king like Jesus. He is unlike any king. He loves you with all of his heart. He is wiser than any king. Everything that he tells you to do is for your own good. He makes all of these wonderful promises, and he has demonstrated through the resurrection of Jesus Christ that we celebrated last week that he is powerful enough to fulfill all of those promises. So if you're looking to follow someone who is worthy of your allegiance, then King Jesus is the one. If you need more information upon him, about him, then please talk to one of us. Let's all celebrate that as we stand together and sing.
He became sin who knew no sin, that we might become his righteousness.